Ms. Homer, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Ashley Homer. I'm an American who's been living and working in Tanzania, East Africa, for the past 8 years, working on both education and health programs for children in rural parts of Tanzania.
You're also the founder and executive director of the Red Sweater Project. Tell us about this project.
Well, the Red Sweater Project was born out of experience that I started on when I was 25 years old, and I had moved to Tanzania to live in a Maasai village in the northern part of the country, just outside Arusha, in an area called Monduli, and worked at a community school. I'm a trained soccer coach, and will teach English. And then toward the end of my year-long post there, was offered 20 acres of land by a nearby community government that said, we'll give you the land if you build us our first secondary school within the community. And I said, okay. So that started the journey of building Orkeswa Secondary School, which is now open with 150 students and the only institution that most of the students in the area are able to attend due to its affordability and accessibility within the community. So that bore the idea of creating model secondary schools within communities that are supported by communities, and that's how Red Sweater Project was born. So in 2011, headed back to Tanzania in specific search of more partners and more land, and then was given the community of Mungere, contributed 15 acres of land, and said that they would like a secondary school in their community as well. So same situation, three primary schools. You know, most children are unable to go on to secondary school due to the school fees, and just lack of institutions, lack of teachers, and so finished construction of the first classrooms of that school in March of this year, 2012, and opened with the first 40 students in September. And so Red Sweater Project's goal, you can imagine, our students actually wear red sweaters as part of their government. The government requires students in all schools wear a uniform.
So Red Sweater is your students' uniform, and it's the project's title. Does the color red symbolize something more to the project?
It came out of an idea when we first started thinking about ways to not only, you know, provide good uniform, but also to show our just appreciation and respect for the local community. Things that are associated with Maasai, other colors, have always they appreciate and wear the colors of red and blue. And so as we started to design it, we said, well, what if we had red sweaters and blue pants and blue skirts?
Tell us about the situation on the ground in Tanzania. What is it like for children?
Yeah, for most children, they are brought up in a life that's pretty predetermined. They are either herding livestock or they become a farmer and just basically take on the trade of their mother or father without really much any sort of real opportunity to grow beyond that due to the lack of educational opportunities, as well as lack of youth on there's just massive youth unemployment. So most children, though now universal education is available at the primary school level, right now in Tanzania, only, 98% roughly of children are attending primary school, which is all wonderful, only 18% actually enroll in secondary school, and even worse still, only 7% graduate. So in a country of 45 million, on a continent that's the youngest in the world, that's a lot of children out of school, and especially the girls. You know, right now, statistics are showing that pretty much putting girls in secondary school has the most impact in alleviating global poverty, but yet still remains one of the most underutilized resources in the world. And so no different than in Tanzania as well. Most of the students just don't have the resources to not only go to school, but have the ability to travel long distances, to go to boarding schools, or to pay for the uniform or shoes or school supplies. Most families just can't afford it. And so this is the first step in terms of partnering with the Tanzanian government, starting to build up those institutions, get more institutions on the ground, but also create awareness, get more Tanzanians involved in the education movement.
You mentioned about girl students. Studies also show that the situation of girl students in Tanzania is pretty tough due to gender-based violence such as sexual assault and early marriage. Do you have a special program that tackles these issues?
Yeah, definitely the situation with girls in Tanzania is a fragile one. Recent studies have shown in both Kenya and Tanzania that of the girls who had expressed any sort of like sexual abuse before the age of 20, 90% that it was said it was due to a school administrator. The quite hot realities for a lot of girls that enter into institutions where the girl is not valued, and a lot of tribal or traditional views are still very present. So that's one of the ideals that we do try to combat on our campuses. But what we work to do is to create environments where boys are treated the same as girls. Boys aren't treated as smarter or faster or more intelligent than girls, which is also a commonly held belief, and especially in like the math and science subject areas. But we also try to create environments where girls are provided female mentors. We do a lot of health outreach with the girls in terms of understanding your body and puberty, because most of these social services are not found at home, even if the family is receiving some sort of medical assistance in the community. You know, a lot of the areas don't have clinics, or they don't have midwife, or they don't have any sort of OBGYN. And yeah, statistics show that if a girl is not entering school at the average age of 13, which is the average age that a girl enters school in Tanzania, by 14 she's married, and by 15 she has a baby.
You said that it all started for you in 2005 when you finished college to teach English in Tanzania. Have you ever thought you will end up doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, I know I talk with a lot of colleagues and, you know, who say sometimes, you know, whatever they've been working on, you know, it sort of found them as opposed to the other way around. And I would somewhat say the same. I was working in the mortgage industry and you know, just working in finance and went on this trip just to do something that I knew I would never do again, you know, kind of the trip of a lifetime. But if you had told me 10 years ago that I would be doing this, I would have completely disagreed and said, there's no way that I would be doing that. But here I am. And it's just become a great passion. And as a female growing up in the United States, being given all the opportunities that anyone in the world could hope for, having a supportive family who is all about education and understood the absolute importance of education, and then going to a place where that's not always the case. Girls do not have choices. They are betrothed to be married before they're even born in some situations, and just are not, you know, their life's almost over before it even starts. And so that was kind of the spark. That's something that I hold very close and creates the drive to continue to do what we do.
You have continued to partner with village leaders to get more land and resources to build more schools. How did you manage to get such strong will and commitment from the community?
Yeah, and that's probably the secret to success, I think, is so many international organizations or individuals go to a place, think that they've identified some sort of problem, and then they institute their solution of how they think they would fix this so-called problem. Without consulting any locals, without even talking to government leaders or village leaders or mothers or the actual community members, and asking them, what would be the goals for this community? How can we help develop this community further in a way that the villagers would like to, regardless of education level or need, you know, what do the villagers want? And one of the points that we constantly stress is this is not our school, but you know, the land was built on, community was in charge. We do help facilitate, just because there's such a lack of educational resources, so we provide the operations as well. But that the villagers are actively involved in the development, actively involved in construction of those schools and their facilitation. But we only go to communities that say, okay, we will, you know, so it's a partnership. It's not, and one of the words that we use is the creation of educational opportunities, not providing. We're not providing those things. We are working alongside the community members to create those opportunities, because it's only with conjunction with the community will those ever succeed.
Ms. Homer, has the process been easy, or did you have hurdles and difficulties in the process?
Yeah, there's always hurdles and difficulties. The one thing that I've recognized, you know, there are over 120 tribes in Tanzania alone. So it's not a one size fits all solution. You're gonna have to tweak things and change things depending upon the tribe, depending upon what is acceptable. You can't just come in and say this is how you do things and completely abandon centuries of history and tradition. That's also not part of the model. But so what works in one village in regards to a school model model and how facilitated by the community is completely different than another. And you have to be open and realize that you're going to make mistakes. A specific mistake that we had was we had said we're looking at girls that were becoming pregnant within the community. And, you know, looking at the statistics, your mind would tell you, okay, well, even though these girls are pregnant, well, we should keep them in school because eventually that will be better off for the baby and the family, having a more educated mother with more skills than one without skills. So what we found was because the community members valued so much, you know, that having children and very, you know, multiple children and many children, and starting early, we found that the girls actually started saying, oh, let's have more children because the school is in support of it, when really that wasn't the message that we were trying to convey. And so now we have a very, you know, strict policy in terms of, you know, and it's a case-by-case basis, depending on the situation. There's a lot of rape and abuse and things that happen, you know, no different than anywhere else.
Ashley, over this 8 years you've worked in Tanzania, can you tell us what has been your proudest moment?
The proudest moment. after all the construction's finished and, you know, we've hired teachers and you have the desks in class, and we built classroom structures where we have offices that bisect two classrooms. It's kind of a very local, you know, we try to build with local contractors and hire Tanzanians. And so it's great to sit in one of those. Proudest moment is probably just sitting inside an office that wouldn't have been there unless you had built it, and hearing the echo of the teachers in the classrooms and realizing that these kids are in desks and they're learning, and it's all because of what you've done and all those who you've partnered with. The kind of the realization of this dream that I never thought would have existed, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and really seeing the active participation and learning of education just in process, and seeing the light bulb go on in the kids' heads and their amazement of having access to materials that is very highly unlikely to be found in an African classroom.
You've also learned to speak Swahili, I heard.
Yeah, I did speak pretty conversationally fluent Swahili, yeah.
How helpful was learning the language and running the project?
I find myself becoming quite a consultant these days. So when people come and say, okay, Ashley, I would like to start this project, and I first say, okay, well, do you want to start the project because the village wants it, or the people who you're working for want the project, not because you want to have the project? And then two, they ask me, what's the number one thing that I should do? And I said, well, if you're working in a population that speaks a certain language, you need to learn that language. And a lot of people come back to me and said, you know, thank you so much for the heads up. You know, I realize I wouldn't have been able to accomplish this. Yeah, the most important thing is learning language. Because in places like Tanzania, knowing the language says a lot about who you are. For example, Tanzania being a, you know, highly tourist area, I would say 98% of the people that come through the country are tourists and are not there for longer than, you know, the tour takes them. And so when blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman walks up to a Tanzanian and starts, you know, speaking fluent Swahili, they're very shocked, but also very proud that you have taken the time to learn their language. Tanzanians are very proud people and are very appreciative. You've taken the time to learn something about their culture and come to understand who they are, as opposed to, you know, just passing through, enjoying the beautiful, you know, beautiful parts of the country.
This probably will help you earn more land for the school.
I mean, it was good in negotiations, absolutely, and just understanding a lot of the cultural nuances and understanding the different tribes and the traditions that they hold dear. Tanzania is very heavy on, you know, respecting elders, and how you address those people is very, very important. I stood up in front of many village meetings, and seeing how you open up your message can say a lot about what your message says. Not even realize that, yes, you are American, you are white, you know, we have a lot of differences, but in the end, you know, we're all working toward the same goal.
Ashley, good luck with the good work, and we highly appreciate your time.